wouldn't even know what he looks like.
What are you talking about? What are they trying to do?
We're all getting very giddy. What are the two?
We're not even, we haven't even started and they're punchy. All right. City Council will come to order. Today is Wednesday, February 2nd, 2011. It is Thursday, February 3rd, 2 p.m. Sue, how are you today?
Very well, thank you.
Where's Carla?
She's away.
Oh, okay.
Helping
I wouldn't
family.
Have known that. Yeah. Thank you for clarifying.
No, she's helping her family this week.
Oh, great. Can you please call the roll?
Fritz.
Here.
Sorry.
Fish.
Here.
Bossman.
Here.
Leonard.
Here.
Adams.
Here. Quorum is present. We shall proceed. we have a quasi-judicial hearing today. Can you please read the title for item number 132?
Appeal of East Portland Neighborhood Organization, Land Use and Transportation Committee against hearing officer's decision to approve with conditions the application of the Portland Water Bureau for amendments to the 2003 Powell Butte Conditional Use Master Plan, environmental review and adjustments for construction of water system, park facility, and trail improvements at 15800 Southeast Portland Boulevard.
So in this kind of a quasi-judicial hearing, the city attorney makes procedural announcements at the beginning of the hearing. They're required by state law.
Thank you. Before we begin the hearing, I have several announcements to make concerning the kind of hearing we're having today, the order of testimony, and some guidelines for presenting testimony. First, as to the kind of hearing, this is an on-the-record hearing. This means you must limit your testimony to material and issues in the record. You can't bring up anything new. This hearing is to decide only if the hearings officer made the correct decision based on the evidence that was presented to him. If you start to talk about new issues or try to present new evidence today, you may be interrupted and reminded that your testimony must be limited to the record. In terms of order of testimony, we will begin with a staff report by Bureau of Development Services staff for approximately 10 minutes. Following the staff report, the City Council will hear from interested persons in the following order. The appellant will go first and will have 10 minutes to present the appellant's case. Following the appellant, persons who support the appeal will go next. Each person will have 3 minutes to speak to the council. The applicant will then have 15 minutes to address the City Council and rebut the appellant's presentation. After the applicant, the council will hear from persons who oppose the appeal. Again, each person will have 3 minutes. And finally, the appellant will have 5 minutes to rebut the presentation of the applicant and opponents of the appeal. The council may then close the hearing, deliberate, and take a vote on the appeal. If the vote is a tentative vote, the council will set a future date for the adoption of findings and a final vote on the appeal. If the council takes a final vote today, that will conclude the matter before the council. Finally, in terms of guidelines for testimony, again, a reminder, this is an on-the-record hearing. You must limit your remarks to arguments based on the record compiled by the hearings officer. You may refer to evidence that was previously submitted. You may not submit new evidence today that was not submitted to the hearings officer. If your argument includes new evidence or issues, the council will not consider it, and it will be rejected in the council's final decision. If you believe someone who addressed City Council today improperly presented new evidence or presented a legal argument that relies on evidence that is not in the record, you may object to that argument. Finally, under state law, only issues that were raised before the hearings officer may be raised in this appeal to City Council. If you believe someone has raised issues today that were not raised before the hearings officer, you may object to the council's consideration of that issue. And that concludes the opening statements I need to make.
Great. I'll now ask a couple of questions of my colleagues on the City Council that are preliminary but necessary to get us going. Do any members of the City Council wish to declare a conflict of interest regarding the matter in front of us for consideration? Hearing none, does any no members of Council have conflicts of interest to declare? Ex parte contacts. Do any members of the council have ex parte contacts to declare or information gathered outside this hearing to disclose? No member of the city council has ex parte contacts to declare. Does anyone present in the council chambers wish to ask a commissioner about his or her observations on the site or rebut any of those observations? I'm referencing the last two questions I asked the city council. Hearing none, do council members have any other matters that need to be discussed before we begin this hearing? I hear none. So we will now start with the staff report.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm Sylvia Cade, and to my right is Stacy Castleberry. We are the assigned planners for this review. Before I get started, I'd also like to note that we have BES staff present who have expertise in engineering and stormwater management systems and are available to answer any technical questions that the council may have during these proceedings, and also that Portland Transportation staff are also available if any questions arise. As one housekeeping note, a December 8th, 2010 email exhibit was attached to the notice of appeal. It's the last page of the appeal statement. After this was mailed out, it came to our attention that this is actually new information that was submitted after the record was closed, and we request that it be removed from the record and council not consider that bit of new evidence. There we go. The hearings officer approved the Water Bureau's application to amend their existing conditional use master plan, as well as an environmental review to construct water system facilities, stormwater facilities, and park improvements for adjustments to specific standards for the Powell Butte development under the master plan were also approved. The hearings officer's decision was appealed by the East Portland Land Use Transportation Committee. The request is subject to these approval criteria.
Good afternoon, Mayor Adams and Commissioners. I'm Stacy Castleberry from the Bureau of Development Services. And as you can see, there were three sets of approval criteria that applied to amending the master plan. To approving environmental review and adjustment review for the specific construction activities out at Powell Butte. Two of the sets, the master plan amendment criteria and the adjustment criteria, are right out of the zoning code, as you can see. It is a little unusual that the environmental review approval criteria are spelled out in the 2003 Powell Butte master plan. Just as a little background, City Council approved the 2003 Powell Butte master plan, which originally approved the reservoirs, pipelines, parks, facilities, trails, and associated improvements that we're talking about today. And many of those projects from the 2003 master plan are already built. This slide also reminds me to tell you that the applicant has extended the 120 days within which the city must issue a decision on this case, and the 120-day clock expires on February 18th, 2011. Powell Butte is in southeast Portland, between Southeast Powell Boulevard and the Springwater Trail, near the eastern city limits line. And much of the Butte, as you can see in this air photo, is open grassy meadow. It also has abandoned orchard on it. The perimeter is steep forested slopes, and Johnson Creek is south of the Springwater Trail. The zoning on Powell Butte is open space with a few pockets of residential, and the entire butte is covered by the city's environmental zones, either environmental conservation over kind of the top of the butte or environmental protection over the perimeter forested portions of the butte. And Powell Butte is in the Johnson Creek Basin Plan District in the South Subdistrict. The existing and proposed facilities are conceptually shown here. The existing and proposed Parks Center facility improvements are in the northeast corner of Powell Butte, with the water system improvements just to the west of those facilities, along with Conduit 5, which extends southeast down to Southeast Circle Avenue, and the existing outfall at Southeast Circle Avenue. That's the existing outfall to Johnson Creek. This photograph shows the overall character of the top of Powell Butte, the meadow area, where which is also the construction area for Reservoir 2. That's the new 50-million-gallon reservoir, which has already, the site has already been prepared for that reservoir under a review that we did in 2009, and the area has been excavated already. Again, the proposed facilities are shown here in a little bit more detail with the park center in the northeast corner. The water facilities that you see here are reservoir number one in this area that I'm pointing to, and then the excavated pit for reservoir number two over in this area. Stormwater facilities are also shown here along with trails, and again, the existing outfall to Johnson Creek down by Southeast Circle Drive. This is that existing outfall. You can see the wing wall here. And the proposal that accompanied this review was to simply extend the two existing wing walls by 2 feet, as shown in this graphic. The hearings officer
Stacey,
found...
Can you
yes.
Just, what is a wing wall?
A wing wall is... Do you see the yellow arrow in this photograph? It's that vertical wall that extends out from the bulk of the structure that people are standing on in this slide. And it, and I'm sure there's engineers in the audience who will help clarify this, but my understanding is it helps direct the flow of water that's going to be coming out from behind. Do you see where my arrow's kind of going behind the wing wall? And the outfall points toward the creek there.
And why was it necessary to extend it 2 feet?
I'm hoping that the applicant can get into the details of that. My understanding is it has to do with improvements that are made to the stormwater facilities up on the butte. And the stormwater facilities are to collect new stormwater that's going to be generated by some of the new improvements up on the butte. And then just to get to the hearings officer's ultimate decision, he found that the BDS staff report properly characterized the application as a proposal to amend the 2003 master plan and that it conducted all relevant analysis required by the Portland Zoning Code. He found that the Portland Water Bureau stormwater proposal adequately addressed and met all relevant approval criteria. The hearings officer found that this application met all relevant approval criteria and should be approved with conditions, and his exact approval language is shown in this slide. The appellant described 4 problems with the hearings officer's decision, and they are that the master plan amendment criterion 33.815.100C is not met as it pertains to safety, because the neighborhood requires early notification if a 1,000-year flood event is to occur, and that the applicant did not address grading, excavation, or filling as part of the environmental review, and that during construction of the excavation for the reservoir number 2, the construction entrance that's required by our erosion control title, Title 10, was not built until May 13th, 2010, and therefore the Title 10 standards may not be met for this part of the project. And lastly, that the standards from the master plan that regulate outfalls discharging to Johnson Creek are not met because the permits from applicable state and federal agencies have not been obtained. Now, Sylvia Kate will discuss the first appeal point,
which is a criterion specific to the conditional use and the master plan. The appellant argued at the public hearing that the proposal should be denied based on the conditional use criterion of livability that states in part the proposal will not have significant adverse impacts on the livability of nearby residentially zoned lands due to a number of items and safety issues is the category that the appellant calls out in the appeal statement, which states in part that this criterion is not satisfied until, quote, as much early notification of a 1,000-year flood as is possible for residents downstream so that families can get out of harm's way in time. In his decision, the hearings officer considered this safety argument.
Can I just, we've got a patch that showed up blocking the screen.
Yeah.
Is it possible just to minimize the patch?
Oh, it's updating software. Do we need to take a break?
No, we just drag
it down. Can we drag it down?
Yeah, we're able to drag it down.
Can we take a break? Can we get an extra minute because of that?
Yes.
Could you actually back it up one slide?
You get an extra minute.
Okay. I think what I was doing before that little conundrum is I was concluding that the appellant's appeal statement felt that this criterion was not met due to the absence of a requirement for notification as early as possible of a 1,000-year flood event for residents downstream. In his decision, the hearings officer considered the safety argument and made extensive findings that the proposal does meet this criterion. It should be noted that the Water Bureau has a city council adopted emergency operations plan that outlines all the protocols and actions to be conducted during an emergency. This plan is Exhibit H4, subletter H in the record. The applicant provided a copy of this emergency operations plan to the appellant on November 12th. And based on the evidence, the hearings officer considered that the proposal meets the safety component of this criterion.
Do you have a copy of that exhibit?
We have it in the record here in chambers. I don't have it right here at the desk.
I don't think I have a copy of that. So if the hearings officer's decision is based on that document, I'd like to see what it is.
Should we provide that to you at the end of our testimony
today?
That'd
be great.
Okay, thank you. The second appeal point then has to do with grading and excavation. The appellant stated that the applicant did not address any grading, excavation, or filling impacts as part of the environmental review. The hearings officer found that in 2009, the Water Bureau received approval of environmental and adjustment review for excavation and site preparation for reservoir number 2. The same appellant appealed the 2009 decision and then withdrew that appeal. The hearings officer's findings for the current environmental review refer to detailed construction management plans, which comprise 9 plan sheets, plus specific grading plans that comprise 7 separate plan sheets, which were all approved by the hearings officer for this project and all show grading for the various project components. With regards to the third appeal point regarding erosion control at the site during early construction activities for Reservoir 2, the hearings officer described on pages 36 and 74 of his decision that the applicant's erosion control plans, or he described the plans and found that they would meet erosion control standards for the projects currently under review. Further, in the email correspondence from David Schaff to City Council in May of 2010, he described the rock-lined construction entrance that was installed for the 2009 case. There were no Title X violations cited, and BDS site development erosion control inspectors have indicated that the Water Bureau installed the rock entrance in good faith. The last appeal point regarding the existing outfall at Johnson Creek, To that, the hearings officer found that the proposal will not alter the probability or severity of an emergency overflow event to Johnson Creek, and more importantly, that no new outfalls are proposed, and that there is no proposed change to the area of stormwater collection that will discharge to Johnson Creek. In closing, this is where I remind council that you may take one of the following actions. You may deny the appeal and uphold the hearings officer's decision, or you may overturn the hearings officer's decision and uphold the appeal, or you may deny the appeal and uphold the hearings officer's decision with modifications. And that concludes our presentation. Thank you.
Discussion from council for this group of staff folks. Thank you very much. Appreciate your work. Very succinct. We'll now hear from the appellant for Catherine. How many minutes?
Ten.
10 minutes? 10 minutes. Welcome back.
Thank you. Linda Bauer, East Portland Land Use and Transportation Committee. In this case, we are not talking about normal maintenance. As part of this project, the Water Bureau will be building a dechlorination building so that the water during regular maintenance will be clean and cool, and if outfall during the summer, will actually be an asset to Johnson Creek. We are talking about an emergency overflow, an earthquake, a terrorist attack, or a malfunction. On November 2nd, 2010, staff sent an email that said, "Can they actually convey a 1,000-year event? I don't know." I was trying to explain in the situation in plain language, and I made up an example to illustrate the point. We have never modeled anything larger than a 100-year event, and I have no idea what such a storm or flood event would look like. We only know that the overflow is a lot bigger than is required to be handled in a 100-year event. Why has the modeling for the expected overflow of Johnson Creek not been modeled? Is it not important? On November 15th, 2010, I received another email on this same topic. However, in my quick review, I find that neither the Corps of Engineers nor FEMA or any other disaster agency I can find considers the need for disaster planning for such a Missoula flood type event. How can the City Council find that the proposal will not have significant adverse effects on the livability of nearby residentially zoned land if safety issues, which staff publicly writes that they have, do not have any modeling, and if they state publicly, we only know that the overflow is a lot bigger than is required to be handled in a 100-year event. I tend to think of an emergency overflow of Powell Butte Reservoir as 2 gallons of water being poured into a 1-quart container. Johnson Creek has historically experienced flooding problems, sometimes several times a year. On page 62, the hearings officer's decision, the standard to be met states, outfalls may discharge water or overflow into Johnson Creek if designed to reduce potential erosive effects. The Water Bureau will be increasing the wing wall by 2 feet, but that only focuses the outfall more directly into Johnson Creek, but does not reduce potential erosive effects. I can find nowhere in the record any efforts to reduce potential erosive effects of an outfall to Johnson Creek. This part of the standard is not met. The standards go on to say, and they can discharge, and if authorized by applicable state and federal permits. The issue that was raised was that no permits from any state or federal agency were submitted into the record as proof that this standard has been met, and nowhere in the record can I find a statement from the Water Bureau that they have the necessary permits from any state or local agency to overflow 1 million gallons of water into Johnson Creek. The approval criteria 33-815-100C livability requires that the applicant show the proposal will not have significant adverse effects on livability of nearby residentially zoned lands due to privacy or safety issues. On page 31 of the decision of the hearings officer, it states, a 1,000-year storm event, in staff's opinion, is of such potential magnitude that the event could potentially overwhelm any carefully engineered system that meets all regulatory requirements. If staff and the hearings officer are correct and any carefully engineered system would be overwhelmed, then what chance does an unsuspecting family have to get out of harm's way in time? Staff notes that the above approval criteria is discretionary, which means that the Portland City Council can create a unique solution that fits this unique situation. The Portland City Council could add a condition of approval that requires the Water Bureau to give the 20 or so residents below, downstream of the overflow pipe, as much notice as possible of a pending 1,000-year flood event. We hope that the Portland City Council will understand that there is a potential that our homes will be destroyed and that our families could be killed. If the Land Use Committee were asking for the Water Bureau to floodproof all the houses downstream of the Water Bureau-made Missoula-type flood event, it would be very costly. And in the opinion of staff and the hearings office, the flood could potentially overwhelm carefully engineered systems anyway. The request that we're making is for as much early notification of a 1,000-year flood event as is possible so that residents downstream of the flood can get their families out of harm's way. A 1,000-year flood event may overwhelm any engineering system, but with advance notice from the Water Bureau before they release the flood, loss of life can be kept to a minimum.
May I just ask, and this won't be charged against your time, I'm sure. When you say that the earliest notification possible, can you be specific as to what kind of notice you are proposing should be required?
They can do like they do at the coast and have a tsunami warning, or they could call people directly. I'm sure we would all be very willing to give them our phone numbers. And I'd like to pin the time down to at least an hour, but I don't know that they'll have an hour. I just need as much notice as they have. They monitor their pipes all of the time. And whatever time they can give us would be very much appreciated.
Thank you.
The 35 outstanding Title 10 violations resulting from Phase 1 construction of Pal Butte, as far as I knew in the record, were still not resolved. There's a complete history in the record. And if you still have questions, I would be happy to answer them. But what you need to know is if those violations are still outstanding, which I think they are, they not only violate your Title 10 erosion control manual, but they also violate your MPDES permit with DEQ, which could be a problem. On page 46 of the decision of the hearings officer, number 7, all zoning code requirements are met unless superseded by the master plan. The requirements of 33-430-070E, changing topography, grading, excavating, and filling have not been superseded by the master plan. The requirements that an environmental review be done to review any impacts of the grading, excavating, and filling in an environmental zone such as Pal Butte were not addressed anywhere in the record. And did you send around that? She has a maps that show the extent of the excavation and fill that the Water Bureau is still proposing to do. They are going to dig out some more of the pit. There's some left to do. And then they're going to be doing the excavation and fill that they've outlined on that page. The applicant did not address grading, filling, excavation, or filling as part of their environmental review. In fact, the words excavation or fill do not appear anywhere in the environmental review section of this application. The approval criteria is not met. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay. All right, we will now hear from supporters of the appeal.
Oh, thank you.
Does anyone wish to testify in support of the appeal? All right, we will now hear from the principal opponent. Please begin.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. I'm Teresa Elliott with Portland Water Bureau, and I work across the street in the Portland building. I'm the principal engineer in charge of the Powell Butte project. With me are Tim Brooks with Winterbrook Planning and Brad Phelps from CH Toom Hill. We also have other staff available to help answer questions if that becomes necessary. Brad will explain about the existing system and what the proposed what's in the proposed project. Tim will address the 4 points directly that were raised in Linda's appeal. Because this appeal hearing is on the record, we're limited on what we can say. I understand the concerns and issues raised, and I'm sure that there are other ways to respond to those concerns. Nevertheless, I can show that we meet all of the applicable approval criteria for you to approve this land use. Stormwater management has been a main concern expressed throughout phase one and phase two. We've received numerous comments, approximately 95% of them focused on stormwater management. Our design incorporates a very conservative approach to stormwater management using the 100-year storm event for their design rather than the 25 years that the city requires. We collaborated extensively with Bureau of Environmental Services and consultants to voluntarily exceed the requirements of the stormwater management system, of the city's requirements for both temporary and permanent stormwater. The issue of emergency response and emergency overflow came up late during the land use review, during the hearing, and the week following the hearing. So there is very little technical information in the record. Information about discharges from the outfall is in the record, principally as it relates to stormwater and its impact on Johnson Creek. It was never addressed as stormwater emergency overflow. That was not the question. Overflow pipe and the overflow structure are existing features that were reviewed and approved in the original, when we built the original reservoir in 1980. Although the information about their size, capacity, function, and purpose was included in the current land use application, we don't believe that they should be included as part of the appeal process. Emergency response is not a land use criterion and has not been addressed in the land use review. Portland Water Bureau takes a very conservative approach to providing safety. We have a number of safeguards and redundancies built into our water system to make sure that we operate the system safely and provide safe drinking water. At Powell Butte, this includes making sure that an emergency overflow situation doesn't occur in the first place. Each reservoir has a safety buffer built into it near the top of the reservoir that is monitored and maintained 24 hours a day. We have redundant alarms that indicate when the water levels are approaching this limit, and again when the water levels have reached the safety margin, so that operators have time to adjust the valves and controls to prevent an overflow situation from developing to begin with. Because of these safeguards, we have several hours to respond and correct the problem or divert the water into the system before the level of the water reaches the top, so an overflow situation never develops. Because the overflow is water coming out of the top, this is not a catastrophic failure, and there is no wall of water suddenly coming down the hill and causing a flood to the neighbors. However, in the event that there is an emergency, regardless of what kind it is, We follow the Bureau's and the City's emergency response plans. We do have an emergency notification process that's already in place that we follow. As these plans require, we give notice to public agencies, PULM, Multnomah County, National Weather Service, and media who are responsible for putting out the public notices and advisories. Today, these alerts and public notices go out through reverse calling, social media, radio, and television.
Could I interrupt you?
Yes, sir.
I'll give you more time. We just recently acquired, and by we, I mean the Bureau of Water and the Office of Emergency Management, recently acquired state-of-the-art telephone notification system that automatically has landlines in it, and people can register their phone numbers as well. When I was given a briefing on that at its conception and then recently saw its implementation, I was very impressed by the fact that you could identify every telephone, email, text message recipient, cell phone recipient within a geographic area and notify them simultaneously on at least three or five different modes that there was some sort of danger. You can notify them. Have you contemplated that as part of the protocols on this specific facility?
I actually have never heard of this system, but we use the Water Bureau and the POEMS notification process, and POEM is that's the group that puts out the notices.
Let me rephrase what I just described is available to you now, just in the last month. So, trust me.
I just don't know about the system. And so, no, we did not consider it in
our
answer.
We'll call David Schaff up here and grill him on it. Go ahead.
At this point, Brad's going to explain what developments already exist and what is it in the proposed project.
Can we have the screen, please?
Thank you.
So the people sign up.
I'm Brad Phelps with CH2M Hill, the consultant helping the city on this project. I did want to address the issue that Stacy brought up concerning the wing wall question, and I've got a graphic here that shows the drawing that was in the land use product. And as well, a photo down here of a little bit different angle than what Stacy had. What we're going to do is when I click the button, you'll see a 1 foot raise of the wing wall. Not a 2 foot, it's a 1 foot raise. We're going to stick a steel bar to contain the water within that channel that you see there as it exits out of a pipe at that head wall and goes towards Johnson Creek. That doesn't increase the amount of flow out of this box. What it does, it just contains the flow inside the box so water doesn't drip out the outside of the wall. So I wanted to clarify that for you. What I do want to explain is how the system works. It's a very complex system of a couple tanks, which I'll call bathtubs, and a number of pipes that go different directions. What we have is, in general terms, one faucet filling up one bathtub right now. Reservoir number one, water comes in from the upper right-hand side, fills in reservoir number one, and we have the Washington County supply line going off to the left-hand side. There's also, from that bathtub, a drain. That drain pipe goes down to Johnson Creek. That drain pipe is a drain of the reservoir, provides overflow water support, as well as stormwater at the current time. So we have one bathtub, one faucet, one drain. What we plan to do is add a second bathtub, reservoir number two, and connecting pipe to that. But we don't increase the water flow to the bathtubs. We still have one faucet. We also connect the overflow pipe over to reservoir number two. We just extend the drain over. We don't increase the drain size or its capacity. We don't increase the inflow from the faucet. We just add another bathtub. In addition, we've rerouted the stormwater pipes because we need to measure the stormwater separate than reservoir drain and overflow. It still goes into the overflow pipe, but again, we don't change the size of the pipe or the outfall in our proposal. So the amount of overflow that we had when we built the system back in 1980 is the same t- today as it was back in 1980. We're not increasing flow at all. We're just increasing the amount of storage at the site. So we're not increasing overflow. The overflow has been there since 1980, and the potential to overflow has been there since that time. This particular graphic is from Exhibit C8, from the land use, and all we've done is show the elements of the project in color so you can see what it is. This is not new evidence. With that, I'd like to transfer it over to Tim to discuss the counterpoints of the appeal.
Thank you, Brad. Yeah, I think your clock stopped. Tim Brooks with Winterbrook Planning, 310 Southwest 4th Avenue, Suite 1100, Portland 97204. Good afternoon, Mayor Adams and commissioners. I'd take about 5 minutes to review Linda Bauer's concerns and the Water Bureau's response. The handout I just passed out covers my testimony and provides specific references to exhibits that are responsive to Linda's issues that are currently in the record. The first issue is essentially about notification. As Linda discussed, a request to advance notice of downstream residents in the event of a flood event. As Teresa has explained, there is a council-ordained emergency response plan already in place. It follows established protocols, providing timely notification through multiple channels to affected Portland citizens through established media. Linda raises this request in the context of the conditional use livability criteria of 33815-100C, which includes a reference to safety issues. Brad has just walked us through the basic inflow, outflow, and storage system at Powell Butte. There are two key conclusions from this, as he mentioned. The emergency overflow system at Powell Butte already exists. The overflow pipe and the overflow structure will remain in the ground where they are today, and this project will not change the system's current capacity or its discharge rate or volume. The second, also as Brad has mentioned, the reservoir storage capacity will double with the new reservoir. And what this means is that twice as much water can be held and there's twice as much time to respond and address an issue before it becomes an emergency. Building this project will therefore essentially cut the risk of an overflow occurrence by half, which is another way of saying that we have doubled the margin of safety here. And one other point here is that the project will actually, as has the hearings officer confirmed, reduce stormwater flows to Johnson Creek by 11% compared with existing conditions. This is an additional increase to our margin of safety. Second issue has to do with whether separate environmental review for grading, excavation, and fill is needed. And Linda believes that this requirement was not superseded by the master plan. A couple of comments here. First, as Stacy mentioned, I think the primary focus of the Powell Butte Phase 1 environmental review completed in 2009 was reservoir excavation and site grading. In his current report, the hearings officer completed an environmental review following the master plan environmental review procedures and criteria. He imposed conditions specific to grading, erosion control, and site revegetation. Grading plans clearly show all grading work as part of the disturbance areas that are reviewed, minimized, and mitigated in the environmental review. Also, figure 5.6 shows specific areas of fill and excavation with calculations of cut and fill quantities. Third issue relates to erosion control and questions how, and Linda questions how the erosion control standard will be met given the alleged history of erosion violations during phase one of the project. In support of that charge, Linda submitted two attachments that I think are instructive. The first is a one-page excerpt from the city's Title 10 code, which reads in part, when the director determines that a violation of this title has occurred, the director shall notify the responsible party and the property owner in writing that a violation of this title has occurred. And no notice of violation was received by either the contractor or the owner at any point during the phase one construction, and there's no evidence of any such notice and therefore any violation in the record. The second item submitted is the email correspondence between Commissioner Fritz and David Schaff. In it, Mr. Schaff confirms that there is no erosion code violation. We believe that the hearings officer properly found that the Water Bureau will employ best management practices for erosion control following current city erosion control manual in Title 10, and therefore will meet the erosion control standard. Fourth issue concerns the standards for outfalls in the master plan. The concern is two-part. First, Linda questions the hearings officer finding that changes to the reservoir associated with this project will not affect, will not alter the probability or severity of an emergency overflow event to Johnson Creek. As I noted in the first issue and Brad reviewed in his presentation, both the probability and severity of an event actually goes down. The second part of the issue is the assertion that the overflow does not have proper permits. This is an existing structure approved as part of the 1977 conditional use permit for Reservoir 1. In the appeal, Linda cites new evidence corresponding with DEQ that is not in the record, and I think Sylvie has pointed this out. To respond, we would need to introduce new evidence as well. While we maintain that this standard does not apply to an existing outfall, one option for the council that might address this would be to add a condition of approval to this decision to the effect that prior to issuance of a BDS construction permit, the Water Bureau shall provide evidence to BDS that applicable state and federal permits or approvals have been obtained for the discharge of stormwater or overflow to Johnson Creek. And with that, I'll turn it back to Teresa to close.
Thank you. Today, all of the water comes into Portland through Powell Butte. Reservoir 2 is very critical to the city, to fulfill our obligations to the city and to the citizens of Portland, and to be able to continue providing safe drinking water. Through extensive public involvement process and outreach spanning over a decade, we've developed a project that we hope will be enjoyable, will be an enjoyable experience to all the park users while protecting wildlife and natural resources. We have a number of safeguards built into the system so that allows us to operate the system safely and to provide as much and to provide safe drinking water. This includes making sure that an emergency overflow never does occur. Thank you for your time and your consideration.
Any discussion?
I just want to say, Mayor, that I had no idea that our drinking water was coming out of bathtubs being drained. But I think that will be somewhat alarming to the public.
It was a good analogy.
That's how we keep it so affordable. All right. We will now hear from any supporters of the principal opponent. Okay. Rebuttal by the appellant.
Linda Bauer, for myself and the East Portland Land Use and Transportation Committee. This, part of this is already done. This and this and this were all moved from the 1990 places. These are the excavation and fills proposed. They were all moved from to new locations, they couldn't have been approved in the older version because they are new locations, and nobody knew what size they were going to be or that kind of thing. The environmental review that was required for excavation and fills is in this current land use review, and it was not done. As far as the violations go, BDS notified the Water Bureau that there was a problem, that the construction entrance had not been installed, not once, not twice, but three times. They sent them a notice saying that the construction entrance needed to be installed. The Water Bureau got back to them. They'd do it in a week. They got another notice. They sent another notice, I don't know, maybe a month later. Again, the reply was, we'll do it next week. BDS sent them a third notice that the construction entrance was not installed. And right after they finished up all of the hauling that they were going to do, they installed the construction entrance. The Water Bureau did, in good faith, say that they would install the construction entrance. It's just that they didn't do it in a timely manner. And your Title X code says that every day after notice of a violation that they do not install what was required is a separate and distinct violation. They have 35 of them. And because BDS is not requiring them to take care of those outstanding violations, it also violates your MPDES permit with DEQ because MPDES requires enforcement of Title X. Brad's presentation was terrific. I wish we could have had all of that information in the record. It wasn't explained that well in the record at all. And we still need notification directly, not part of some citywide, I don't know, if you want, if whatever, thanks.
Define direct notification.
I would like a telephone call because we hear sirens and ambulances and what?
We can do that.
Okay, that's great. That's good for me.
We can simultaneously do email,
landline, do that.
Text message, cell phone. You're going to have to register your cell phone and your email addresses.
And my neighbors? Can they all call you up? Or are we going to call them?
They can all sign up on their own. And everyone in the city in the next couple of weeks is going to be given an option to opt into the system, including the folks in your neighborhood. And I'm sure that we could do some additional marketing as well for your neighbors.
Yeah, the people that live along Johnson.
Absolutely.
That would be terrific.
Except that I'd be remiss if I didn't point out, if we had a Missoula-type flood event, the average depth of the water in Portland was 400 feet. So the tip of...
we're not going to be able to get out of the way.
The tip of Mount Tabor and the tip of Rocky Butte were the only things that were land at the time. And it occurred not in the last 1,000 years ago, but between 15 and 18,000 years ago at the last ice age. So if we have another Missoula-type event, the reservoir at Powell Butte are the least of our problems.
I have a question about the construction entrance.
Okay.
That's a downer.
That's really interesting. We won't be alone.
The Federalist Papers.
The construction entrance, is it now properly erosion controlled?
It is. In fact, they installed two wheel washes as part of this project instead of the one that they had. Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
All right. Council of discussion, Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you. I appreciate the appeal and the good work that has gone into this. I especially appreciate that David Schaff put into the record an earlier correspondence that we had had back in May into the record for this hearing that started in November. I wasn't
I didn't know that there was going to be another hearing, so that was it's great that that is in there. And I was under the understanding, and I'm now hearing confirmation, that the erosion control part of the appeal is taken care of, except for the past violations. I liked the suggestion from Mr. Brooks about the additional condition of approval, and if I scribbled it down correctly, that was that prior to issuance of permits, the Portland Water Bureau shall provide evidence to BDS that all applicable federal and state permits have been approved. Is that close enough? You can, if you want to come and give me a revised version while I'm still talking, that would be fine. The most compelling part of the appeal, I think, is the issue of safety. Thank you. And that we do have an approval criterion, which is a discretionary value about safety. And merely, I think the hearings officer's findings should be expanded. You can't say that there's no safety hazard just because we could engineer to a 1,000-year flood, or we couldn't engineer to that. While engineering solutions may be unfeasible, a more secure and safe neighborhood could be achieved with a plan for notification and an evacuation plan for the affected neighborhoods. I appreciate being given the exhibit with the overall Water Bureau Operations Emergency Plan. It doesn't have the specific details that I think the neighborhood is looking for here. And I think, to me, that approval criteria, and the reason that it is a discretionary decision, means that you have to look at more at are the building standards are met. You have to look at the particular circumstances for the project that's being applied for. So I believe that we could deny the application, but with two additional conditions of approval, which I will pass out to my colleagues. Amending the findings, as I just...
You said deny the application.
Deny the appeal, which would be to approve the application, but to add two more conditions of approval, which I believe are met, and I think that the appellant has made a good case for why the approval could be improved upon, and that's why I'm proposing these conditions. The amendment to the findings I just suggested, and then the second amended condition, the first one would be the Water Bureau shall provide evidence to BDS that applicable state and federal permits or approvals have been obtained for the discharge of stormwater or overflow to Johnson Creek prior to the issuance of BDS construction permit. And then the second proposed condition of approval would be the City Water Bureau shall work with the appellant and affected neighborhood through the Office of Neighborhood Involvement and the Portland Office of Emergency Management to develop a good neighbor agreement that provides for a plan of notification and evacuation of the area should a catastrophic event occur and the Bureau has a window of time to provide such notification. And I believe that the process of discussing the good neighbor agreement would then get to the real or believed safety concerns. And I think we're in the middle of discussions about the Joint Terrorism Task Force, which certainly to me evidence that safety is a way of feeling as well as whether the level of risk is something that in itself needs to be addressed.
So I like the intent. I have some concerns about the specificity of the Water Bureau being the entity that works with the appellant and the neighborhood to develop such a plan, because I think it's been demonstrated here that there could be a catastrophe, but not necessarily related to the Water Bureau. As we move forward from this point on, I want to make sure that when the Water Bureau is committing to do something, we are doing it in the most cost-effective way or not incurring a cost we shouldn't otherwise incur. In this case, I'm not sure the Water Bureau should incur this cost. It should be something that I think POEM, Portland Office of Emergency Management, replacing the City Water Bureau with that language, to me, would be the most appropriate entity to work with the appellant and the neighborhood, because, as we have heard, there are emergency notification processes in place that are overseen by the mayor's office and POEM, not necessarily the Water Bureau. So I'd like to get the Water Bureau out of the middle of some of the stuff that they shouldn't be in the middle of, and have POEM be the lead agency that works with the appellant and the affected neighborhood through.
Commissioner Leonard, just for point of clarification, my experience with POEM is that if they're the lead, then they will bring in other bureaus as necessary
right.
to develop the process.
Exactly.
You're just simply placing them at the head of the table. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
And certainly we have staff in the Office of Neighborhood Involvement who are routinely help mediate good neighbor agreements. Mm-hmm. The reason I wrote it up this way is because it's a condition of approval at the Water Bureau's application. So
are they already re-